This is 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. I'm your host this week, Eve Trow. And of course, this week is All Things Elections for most of us. We'll devote the program today to the results of those elections, from school board to U.S. Senate in Louisiana. First up, we talk to Ed Chervenek. He's a political scientist and director of the UNO Survey Research Center. We caught up with him by phone after a very long election night. Ed, I know it's been a long week for you, probably a long year, so thanks for making time to talk to WWNO.
Thanks for having me.
We wanted to talk specifically about the Senate race, but first I did want to get your impression of election season overall. Every election season is obviously really busy for anybody who works in polls, but is there anything that stood out as just particularly remarkable or challenging about your work this year?
Well, for the Senate race, the most challenging part was the fact that there were 24 candidates chasing an open seat. And so then it came to how do we decide on who to include in the survey when we went out and polled statewide. And so we decided to only include those people who held office or holding office or had raised $100,000 in individual contributions. And so that left nine people that we surveyed last month.
And that's different from past Louisiana elections. And do you think that'll define how things go moving forward?
Well, you know, when it comes to an open seat, which is rare, I guess a lot of people felt that they could try and capture it. So it doesn't happen very often. Most contests, you know, have maybe three or four people, and that's about it. So a full menu, it's always hard to choose the dish that you want because there's so many of them there.
I was talking with Stephanie Grace, the columnist for The Advocate, and she said she thought that some voters may have seen that big menu of candidates and said, I have no idea, I'm just not going to pick anybody.
You know, that's a good question. Let me see. I looked at, there was probably roughly about 100,000 vote drop-off from the presidential race to the Senate race. So that may have had some influence.
Voter turnout overall was at, I read, about 63% in Louisiana. How did that mark with what you were expecting?
That's what we were pretty much expecting. The Secretary of State, Tom Shedler, had figured close to 70%. And this was because of high early vote turnout. This cycle, it was 17% compared to 12% last in 2012.
Yeah, we had about 515,000 people in Louisiana do early voting. In terms of the Senate race then, so we've wound up now with two candidates who will go for a runoff next month. That's State Treasurer John Kennedy, Republican. He's in a runoff with the Democratic Public Service Commissioner Foster Campbell. What do you think about those two as our finalists? What were people driven to vote by?
The thing that struck me when I broke down the analysis is that both Kennedy and Campbell were able to expand beyond their base. Campbell's located up in northern Louisiana, and Kennedy's in the Baton Rouge area. And both candidates got support across the state, whereas we saw candidates like John Fleming and Charles Bustani basically did very well at their base, but they didn't get any real vote outside their base. And so that's the reason that Kennedy and Campbell made it into the runoff.
So if Foster Campbell was not necessarily a household name across the state, what do you think gave him the edge over Caroline Fayard, also a Democrat, running?
I think of part of it, he's been around a long time, so he's probably familiar to a lot of people. But I think what might have propelled his campaign at the end was the fact that Fayard had run an ad that basically accused Campbell of agreeing with David Duke, taking a comment out of context and putting it in an ad, and that created a lot of controversy. And I think that's what basically probably convinced some Democrats to move to Foster Campbell rather than vote for Caroline Fayard.
They were just so un.
They were not very happy with the ad that you produced, taking Foster Campbell's words out of context.
Right. And because you said the name first, I'm going to go ahead and say it as well. David Duke did wind up getting more than 50,000 votes in Louisiana. Is this the end of the line for him? Is he just going to keep being this recurring character?
Well, it's hard to say with David Duke. He did get 50,000 votes, but that's only 3%. And I've heard some analysts say that the reason he won was just basically to get his name out there to help his fundraising for his website. So this was just a good way for him to get some exposure and then just, you know, kind of reach into the pockets of his supporters.
And as we look ahead to the runoff, whoever is elected as senator will be joining Bill Cassidy on Capitol Hill. What does Cassidy want and need from this other senator? How will the combination of the two impact what happens for Louisiana?
Well, let's say, you know, I'm going to assume that John Kennedy's will probably win in December. He can make a much more compelling argument that he can go to Washington and help Donald Trump. Both senators from Louisiana will be relatively new, so they'll be lacking in seniority. And so that's kind of a real problem for the state because we have some real needs here, particularly with the recovery up in the middle of the state after the massive flooding. So I'm not sure how effective they can be at this point. You know, it just takes time to get that seniority, to learn the system, to make the contacts, and to know how to make these deals.
Well, Ed Chervenak, I will let you get some rest, and hopefully you have something relaxing planned for this weekend.
there's always more work to do.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
That's Ed Chervenak, director of the UNO Survey Research Center. And we're going to turn now to conversation with some of WWNO's news team, delving a bit deeper into local issues and how these elections will affect them. I'm here in the studio with Eileen Fleming, morning producer for WWNO, Mallory Falk, education reporter, and Ryan Kyloth, coastal reporter. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey.
Thanks, Eve.
Pleasure.
So I'll start with you, Eileen. We just heard from Ed Chervenak on some insights from the Senate race. You've been looking at the response from the governor and the mayor. And let's start with John Bel Edwards. He is a blue governor in a red state. That was quite a surprise when he was elected. The election results last night had no surprises in terms of red and blue in the state of Louisiana. So what did Edwards say in his statement about the presidential election?
This morning he came out with a conciliatory note toward the new president and saying, you know, we can all work together. This comes, of course, as the governor is in D.C. asking lawmakers for more money to help cover those floods. And his language is different from Mayor Landrieu's language, which is a little stronger. So we'll start with this is a little snippet from Governor Edwards. Louisiana will be a strong partner with President-elect Trump and his new administration as we continue to recover from historic flooding and we make critical investments in our infrastructure and as we work to give our kids every opportunity to succeed. That's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, he is there to get
$4 billion.
Yes.
Well, he's hoping
hurrying.
To get that approved right as soon as possible, Hopefully getting that in the lame duck session so he doesn't have to try to wrangle for those funds under a new red House and red Senate.
One factor in Louisiana's favor in that is that Steve Scalise won big, and he's the number three in the House.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have, and we will have, two fresh senators. Or Bill Cassidy's relatively new.
Yeah.
And we'll have a brand new senator.
Likely Republican.
So Scalise will be helpful in getting it through the system in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
a point. And I'm sure the governor doesn't want to offend Steve Scalise.
Well, right. And blue governor, but in a red state, mm-hmm. very different from Mitch Landrieu, blue mayor in a blue city.
Yeah, the Landrieu family is a staunch Democratic family, and they've been friends with the Clintons. And then the Obama family came down many times to Louisiana, and especially during Katrina anniversary events and such. They're tight. I mean, the president always gives Mitch Landrieu a shout out.
Right. So right.
He's not as conciliatory as Governor Edwards. In his statement, he went on for a bit, but then he said, I encourage President-elect Trump to reach out to African Americans, Latinos, Muslims and women to reconcile the divisive rhetoric from this campaign. So he's pushing back. He's pushing back to the president-elect saying, all right, it's time to work with people that
right.
you've alienated.
Probably fewer trips to Washington for Mitch Landrieu between now and 2018 when his term ends, I would imagine.
And there was always talk, buzz, that Mitch Landrieu would probably get some sort of cabinet appointment to mm-hmm. the next administration. Well, I don't see that in a Trump administration. So
right, right. So he may be looking to some different plans for post-2018. A few things that did get on the ballot that affect the city. One was removing the police monitor, the independent police monitor, from the inspector general's budget, making those two separate streams of funding. How'd that do?
That got 71% approval from the voters who decided that those two offices should be split. They'd be best working separately.
And they have had a contentious relationship.
Yes, they have. So that went really quick for them. Okay, split.
And in terms of a runoff for one of the judges' races, we will have a runoff next month for criminal court judge.
Yes. The criminal district court in New Orleans, which is so controversial for its sentencing and inefficiencies. An appellate court judge, it will be Paul Bonin, will be in a runoff with a prosecutor, Ken Guillory. Mm. And that is December 10th. There was an appellate court seat that was up, that was a contentious seat, but that was decided. So the only thing going up for the court at that point will be these two judges going for the district bench.
Right, and that was Regina Bartholomew Woods beating out Lori White for appeals court judge.
Yes.
Well, we'll move on to education. Mallory is here to join us. The big thing in New Orleans was the school board election. What happened there?
So the school board is going to look pretty similar, actually almost identical to how it's looked in the past. All of the incumbents reclaimed their seats. That is, in the three seats that were up for grabs. Four of the seven seats had already been decided when candidates ran unopposed.
And basically that's sending the message that this reunification plan that came out of a mandate from the state that all New Orleans schools go back to the Orleans Parish School Board. Essentially, they won't be under the state recovery school district anymore. So the election is sort of seen as a mandate that process is good. We're good with that process in the city. We want it to move forward.
Exactly. Three of the four challengers really called charter schools into question, had a lot of issues with the charter school movement, and wanted to rewrite the legislation that had already been passed. They believe that it doesn't give the local school board enough power, that it solidifies what we already have rather than creating any meaningful change. And none of them ended up on the school board. And so the incumbents returning means that we will be moving forward with this plan that's already in place.
And what's the timeline on that plan?
So the schools have until 2018 to return, 2019 at the latest, in case there are any hiccups. And so right now, the broad plan has been approved, but the school board will really be tasked with figuring out the nuts and bolts and what exactly this looks like, making decisions about shared services across schools, figuring out what the accountability system will look like to determine whether schools should get shut down or can have their contracts renewed. And so that's what the school board members will be engaged in over the next couple of years as schools begin to return.
Are there any concerns at this point about how this changeover will affect students?
What I've heard a lot of leaders say is the hope is that students and families won't really notice this change at all because charter operators are retaining a lot of their autonomy. The day-to-day life inside of a school should be. It's really things like transportation, the central expulsion office, like I said, accountability when a school's contract is up for review and the superintendent and school board are deciding whether to renew that contract or shut it down. Those are the things where we might see changes. But in terms of what it feels like inside the school during the school day, that should remain consistent if all goes as planned.
One interesting thing that you noticed is that in a couple of other places around the country, there were some measures on the ballot that would have made those places more like New Orleans in terms of getting a charter-based public school system. What happened there?
both Georgia and Massachusetts had measures on the ballot that would have created New Orleans-style reform or expanded New Orleans-style reform. So in Georgia, there was a measure to create an opportunity school district, which would be similar to the recovery school district, where the state would be able to take over the lowest performing schools and either run them directly, convert them into charters, do what has been done in New Orleans. And voters overwhelmingly voted that down. In Massachusetts, there was a measure to lift the cap on charter schools. Right now, there's a set number of schools that can operate. And in Massachusetts, voters also overwhelmingly rejected that. And so what's interesting is people are talking about looking at what happens with this return of the recovery school district charters to the local school board as something that districts around the country will be paying close attention to as they consider whether or not to adopt the New Orleans model. But we've seen these two ballot measures get rejected by voters. And so there are some questions about how popular is this model? Is it going to continue to spread to other states, or are people starting to push back against it?
Ryan and Eileen, any questions or comments for Mallory?
Is New Orleans still the standard for change in school districts because the devastation that Katrina brought, all eyes in the nation looked to see how we were going to fix these schools, and they are getting better. Is it still considered a national standard?
Because New Orleans right now is really the only city where the majority of schools are charter schools, where there's a district made up entirely of charter schools, it really is the city that people turn to. There are other cities that have a lot of charter schools that people are also paying attention to, Detroit, Washington, D.C., but New Orleans really is the one and only city that's adopted this on such a massive scale. And so people continue to focus attention. And because it's been happening here for over a decade now, people really are seeing how it's evolved over time, how it's been improved on over time, and trying to take some of the lessons that we've learned, learn from both our successes and mistakes.
Do we know if those ballot measures in the other states were written with any New Orleans input or New Orleans in mind?
Yeah, opponents to the measure in Georgia did refer to the recovery school district as a failure as they tried to use it as a cautionary tale. I would imagine that depending on how people interpret what's happened in New Orleans, whether it's as a cautionary tale or as something miraculous.
Yeah, exactly.
That influenced the arguments that proponents and opponents made as they advocated for or against this measure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we will move on to the coast. Ryan, all of the Senate candidates at a forum on these issues said the coast is super important. We're going to do whatever we have to. When we look at the two candidates who wound up in the runoff, John Kennedy and Foster Campbell, anything new there for the coast, depending on which of those gets in? Probably going to be Kennedy.
Where to begin? Yeah. The Senate candidates going to the runoff pretty much track the presidential candidates. So Foster Campbell was the only major Senate candidate of all the five or six major choices who actually said out loud that climate change is both real and caused by humans. Mm. No other candidate would admit that. Kennedy sort of grudgingly accepts that, yes, global warming is a thing that's happening, but I don't have the exact quote, but it was something like, the evidence is out on whether or not humans have anything to do with it. Kennedy is pro-coal. He's anti-carbon tax. He's anti-cap and trade. I think he said, if we want to try a carbon tax, let China try it first. Mm-hmm. So the biggest existential problem to not just the coast, but the cities, New Orleans in particular, is sea level rise. Mm-hmm. And Kennedy is not looking like he's going to be doing anything to limit that.
Right. There's sort of an irony there where the candidate doesn't want to talk about climate change, but then wants to commit to the state master plan, says he's on board for that process. And in Louisiana, those are not necessarily seen as opposing views, apparently.
Right, because the state master plan doesn't address, it's more of a short-term solution. Now, when I say short-term, we're talking decades here still. The state master plan, which focuses on restoration of wetlands and protection, meaning levees and things like that, it's focused on staving off the problem. It's focused on kicking the can, you know, down the field a little bit.
Because the road got washed out from sea level rise. So kicking the can across the devastated marsh.
Yeah. But it doesn't address the granted, much thornier, more complicated long-term problem of limiting emissions to try to slow or stop sea level rise. Mm. So in a way, it's almost not paradoxical for somebody to support
the master plan.
The master plan instead. Also, the master plan has money and contractors tied into it today. Like with any climate change issue, with the master plan, you can say, here's something we're doing now versus this sort of looming terror of, I don't know how we'll be able to, as a globe, as a planet, slow emissions.
And that is in keeping with our president-elect Donald Trump and his disavowal of climate change.
Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump has famously said, climate change is a hoax put out by the Chinese to make America less competitive. Let's hold off on Trump.
Fair enough.
A couple more statewide things. There were the two constitutional amendments that touched on the coast. Number 5 passed 54%. This is the one that was going to dedicate, that will now dedicate some oil and gas money for things like roads, bridges, sort of basic spending. So that's good. It'll help the state spend incoming oil and gas money a little bit better. And then 6 was the really complicated budget one about budget and future spending. And it touched on coastal issues in one way, which is that if this passed, which it didn't, it failed a no vote of 58%, it would have locked up coastal dollars and made them much more difficult to spend. So now that money is still on the table.
So coastal money is a little bit less protected than it was.
It's equally unprotected as before for certain various specific triggers. And then the final one, nobody, very few of our listeners, I imagine, would have voted on this. But there was a really interesting race in the Louisiana Supreme Court in the 3rd District, which is southwest Louisiana, 8 parishes out there. 2 candidates. It's the most expensive race in a long time. I forget the exact record, but there were 2 candidates, and the one who won, Jimmy Genovese, he had nearly $500,000 of support from the firms behind the state's coastal lawsuits. So we've got these coastal lawsuits trying to hold oil and gas companies accountable for coastal erosion and other problems. And the 2 candidates in the Supreme Court race, one, the one who guy who won, Jimmy Genovese, with 51%. He was backed by the lawyers, the trial lawyers behind the coastal lawsuit. The other candidate was backed by the industry, by the oil and gas industry, and she lost by 2%. So that was a really interesting case of seeing industry go up against the people trying to hold industry accountable, and the latter eked out a win.
So we may see these coastal lawsuits based on the erosion of the coast due to oil and gas activity go forward.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly one Supreme Court judge, one Louisiana Supreme Court justice who seems supportive is now going to be in office.
In terms, though, of the oil and gas industry, that industry is happy with a Trump presidency. It bodes well for them. And the industry, as we know, is on its knees right now. So what's it looking like in terms of that?
Yeah, the oil and gas industry is thrilled with Trump. Not only is he a climate change denier, but there was talk, Scientific American reported a couple months ago, that he'll be appointing Myron Ebell to head the EPA. This is a guy who, you know, environmentalists have, I think Greenpeace put him on like their climate criminals list or something like that. He called the Clean Power Plan he called the Clean Power Plan illegal. He said the Paris Treaty was unconstitutional. So, yeah, under Trump, we'll see more fracking, we'll see more pipelines, certainly no federal carbon tax, a completely defanged EPA. Oil production will be way up and coal production will be up.
There you have it.
Good for the industry, not so good for the coast.
Ryan Kailoff, Mallory Falk, and Eileen Fleming, thanks so much for doing this edition of All Things New Orleans Elections Week. WWNO's news department, of course, bringing you more on these issues and how they develop in the coming weeks and months. That's all for this edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm your host, Eve Troe. Join us every Thursday for the program here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans, 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux, Houma, or online at wwno.org. This is New Orleans Public Radio.